Blog Talk Radio. You're listening.
Healing rain is coming down. It's coming nearer to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong, it's bringing mercy, it won't be long. Healing rain is coming down, it's coming closer to the lost and found. Tears of joy and tears of shame are washed forever in Jesus' name. The healing rain, it comes with fire. So let it fall and take us higher. The healing rain.
Good morning and welcome to The Cross in the Desert. We're speaking hope and freedom to Iran on this Thursday morning. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life and schedule to join me on The Cross in the Desert. Got a very special program today. We're going to be talking with Hassan Fartousi. He has an organization called No Executions. It's a Facebook page. He lives in Sweden, and this week they're having a special campaign to speak out against juvenile executions in Iran. In fact, they have been going through a process to do this. They have been fasting as a means of protest and drawing attention to this event. So what we're going to do in the next half an hour, we're going to hopefully connect with Hassan live from Sweden. It's about 7 hours difference between Sweden and where I'm located. So we'll be talking to Hassan more about this project, more about juvenile executions here on the cross in the desert. I want to bring you up to date on the latest happenings with Saeed Abedini. Saeed Abedini, as you well know, is the Iranian Christian pastor who has been held in Iranian prison. It's going on now 2 years this September. Last September, Negma, his wife, organized actually a worldwide prayer vigil in behalf of her husband, and she's doing the same again this year. So what I want to do is read to you her status and what she had to say about that this week. September 26, 2014 marks 2 years since my sweet husband, Pastor Saeed Abedini, has been tortured and imprisoned in Iran because of his Christian faith. Our 10th wedding anniversary just passed on Monday, June 30th, representing another painful year that I have spent apart from my husband. As my anniversary gift to Saeed, I want to plan another prayer vigil for him. I believe in the power of prayer. On the day after the last prayer vigil, President Obama mentioned imprisoned Americans on a phone call with the Iranian president. What will happen this year if we pray again? I am planning the second global vigil for 12 noon, that is in your time zone, on Friday, September 26th. Will you help out this year? Please let me know if you would be interested in coordinating a prayer vigil in your area by emailing your response to globalvigil2014, that's globalvigil, V-I-G-I-L, 2014, at gmail.com. It was very successful last year, and I really am glad that this is being planned again, because as a Christian, of course, I agree that prayer is a powerful force against the forces of darkness. And yes, last year, many things happened in coordination with this, amazing things. In fact, when Negma was there at the UN where Rouhani was speaking, it just happened to be that she ran into his delegation, if you will, as they were escorting him out of the United Nations, I believe, after the talk, and she was able to hand-deliver a letter to one of the security guards in that delegation with President Rouhani. Some amazing things happened as a result of this prayer vigil. So I truly am going to support her. I have a good friend who's already got the place set up. It's called Freedom Village or Freedom Park in Illinois. Her name is Teresa, and she's going to be coordinating it as well. And I know that NGMA got worldwide support. In fact, if you've been following the World Cup like I have, an amazing thing happened a couple of weeks ago. There were some participants, I think, or it was just fans in the stadium, I'm not sure, wearing Save Saeed yellow shirts. Many of them were, and they were photographed, I think I see you even interviewed, drawing attention to the plight of Saeed right there at World Cup in Brazil, and amazing things that are happening all over the world in support of Saeed. So again, if you are interested in helping out NGMA and organizing a prayer vigil, just email her at globalvigil2014@gmail.com. Well, another development with Saeed that's very interesting, and I want to read you what NGMA had to say about this as well. Today was an emotional day as Saeed's parents visited Saeed in prison today. Saeed's dad said his emotional goodbyes. He had vowed to not leave Iran without Saeed, but because of his U.S. visa in danger of expiration, he has to leave Iran and enter the U.S. He will be coming to the U.S. on Saturday, that's this Saturday, July 12th, for a few months and will be with ZZ and the kids and I. This is NGMA writing. He held back tears today as he said his goodbyes to Saeed, having to leave Iran without him. Saeed's mom has been going to the magistrate and courts pursuing clemency for Saeed. The courts and officials have been dealing harshly with her and treating her with contempt and disrespect and threatening to arrest her as well if she continues pursuing Saeed's case. The pressure has been too much for her, and she has been hospitalized the last month due to deteriorating health. Please keep Saeed's parents in your prayers. And this is just devastating, that the pressure that Saeed's parents have undergone. And it's good to know that his father will be staying with NGMA, even though he had vowed not to leave Iran unless Saeed was accompanying him. So this is a very painful moment for his parents. Please pray, especially for his mom, who has suffered tremendously because of this situation. As always, right here on the Cross in the Desert, keeping you updated on the happenings. One more last item before we go to our first story of the day. You're aware of Rahana Jabari, the young Iranian girl who was on death row, or still is, and she was scheduled to be executed back in April because she fatally stabbed her rapist, believe it or not. She's going to be to death for defending herself. Many, many human rights organizations have come to her aid, and at this point the trial is still postponed, or the execution, as they say. What they have done, though, because Rahana has been speaking out about this and getting her side of the story out, and other human rights organizations are translating her letters and putting them out on the Internet, her version of the story, the regime has been angry. And so what they did is they marched Rahana out of her cell, put her in a cell with cancer patients and AIDS patients, and then on top of it, they forced her to sleep in the corridor of the prison on a hard, cold concrete floor. Well, this got the attention of my good friend Shadi, and she was so upset about the conditions that Rahana's had to go through, this is their punishment for her, that she said, if she has to sleep on the hard floor of the corridor, I'm going to do the same. Shadi says, I can't just lay in my comfortable bed thinking about her. So I will sleep on the solid hardwood floor here in my dwelling place in solidarity with Rahana. And I was just amazed. And you know, human rights activists have a special bond and connection with the people they campaign for. This is not just some campaign or story. Shadi is an example of the emotional connection she has with those she's speaking out with, and you can understand why she felt the way she felt. Well, some good news about Rahana. Her room has been changed, and she is now much more comfortable, and this is according to her mother, Shali Paravan. And so Shadi says, look, I can now stop sleeping on the floor, as I was doing in solidarity with Rahana, who was forced to sleep on the floor in a busy corridor. So some happy news. Please continue to speak out and pray for Rahana. Your voice is being heard. And it looks as though the Iranian regime is noticing the amount of attention and petitions going the way of Rahana. They are listening, but again, the fight is far from over. Speaking of the fight, I want to bring us up to date with the latest happenings with ISIS in Iraq. Iraqis Christians are facing some very difficult times, as usual, but especially now with the militant, violent ISIS marching across Iraq. I want to give you now some time to listen to all about it. This is a special about Iraqis Christians facing ISIS slaughter here on the cross in the desert. Let's listen.
Well, the ISIS attack on Iraq has opened up the already wide divisions in its society. There is religious strife between Sunnis and Shias, along with the separatist sentiments among Kurds in the north. And then there are other minorities like Christians and Turkmen who are in a dire position, as Lucy Kafanov explains.
Exhausted, terrified, with nowhere to go. These are Iraq's newest refugees. In a single day, tens of thousands of Iraqi Christians were forced to flee their homes after clashes erupted between ISIS militants and Kurdish forces.
All of a sudden, we heard shelling and explosions. We didn't know who was attacking us. We just knew we had to get out.
There wasn't any time to pack. Most families arrived with nothing but the clothes on their backs.
Food, clothes, medicines, important papers, everything we left behind. I don't know how we'll get by. Someone donated those blankets and pillows, and that's all we have.
They found safety on the outskirts of the Kurdish capital, but not much else. Temperatures soar past 100 degrees Fahrenheit. There is power from a generator in the nearby theater, but fuel is running out.
It's hard to believe that just yesterday this was a completely empty parking lot. Overnight it's been turned into a makeshift refugee camp. The families fled in a panic, an entire village emptied overnight. The volunteers are doing their best to help however they can, but supplies are limited and more people keep coming.
Most came from Karakosh, an ancient Christian community on the outskirts of the ISIS-controlled city of Mosul. It was seen as one of the last safe havens for Iraq's dwindling Christian population, not anymore. Families like this one are twice displaced. They left Baghdad at the height of the sectarian civil war.
There is no safe place left in Iraq. In Baghdad, they used to slaughter you for being Christian. Now in Mosul, it's the same thing. There is no one to protect us.
This is the sound of a country torn apart. Sunni militants are sweeping across northwest Iraq. In Baghdad in the south, Shiite militias are digging in. The Kurds, too, are on the move, reclaiming long-disputed territory. Iraq may be one country, but for how long?
Actually, the sectarian divide is real. It's becoming more violent, and that's why you need to separate the communities and have everybody take care of their own.
In Kirkuk province, we meet a leader of Iraq's minority Turkmen community. He's taking us to meet the newly formed militia. They face extermination from Sunni militants, he tells me, but he doesn't trust the Kurds to protect them either.
They are afraid for the Peshmerga to disarm them and then
leave them.
We arrive to find a deserted village. The families have all fled for safety. These men stayed behind to defend the land. They used to be drivers, teachers, farmers, and businessmen. They took up arms 2 weeks ago after Sunni extremists slaughtered dozens of their people in a nearby village.
No one came to protect us when they attacked, not the Iraqi army and not the Peshmerga. It was a wake-up call. Now we are here to defend ourselves. We have enough weapons and we'll fight until the last drop of blood.
Determined, but outnumbered and outgunned, facing an uncertain future in an increasingly fractured Iraq. Lucy Kafanov, Kirkuk Province, Iraq.
These are courageous Christians taking a stand as best as they can in Iraq and are on the run from the militant group ISIS. There are so many ways that we can reach out to them, and one of the most powerful ways we can today is to keep them in our thoughts and prayers, to constantly remind ourselves the cost of following Jesus in a hostile country right now like Iraq. And these are Christians that have very little of their own and are going from place to place to find shelter and refuge. Speaking of shelter and refuge, I want to bring to you a story right now from former Senator Joe Lieberman speaking out about Camp Liberty. Camp Liberty is in Baghdad, Iraq. It is a place where it's harboring some dissidents from Iran since the Iranian Revolution. These are pro-democracy dissidents who are fighting against the Iranian regime. I want you to hear this very important story on Camp Liberty right now on the Cross in the Desert.
Information about the escalating tension and issues in Iraq. That as Islamic militants gain more control, there are now new fears of another possible massacre there. Opponents of the regime in Iran, about 3,000 members of the group, the National Council of Resistance of Iran, well, they live in a former U.S. installation that's called Camp Liberty. Camp Liberty is in Baghdad. They were moved there after previous killings at their former home, known as Camp Ashraf. The group says 116 of its residents have so far been killed, they say, at the hands of the Iraqi government forces during repeated attacks on the camps. And now there are American calls to try and save them. Former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Hugh Shelton, told Fox News the U.S. promised to protect these people, but so far has failed to do so.
We're getting ready to witness a major massacre. 2,900 souls that are left to the hands of the Iraqis to protect when we made the commitment to protect them. That's not right. That's not what America stands for. That's not what we should be doing. We should be coming to the rescue of those 2,900 individuals.
The council wants the U.S. to give them asylum and move them to the safety of our country. Should we? One supporter associated with the group is former U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman, who joins us now here in the New York studio. Senator, astounding allegations that we, the United States of America, failed to protect these people.
Yeah, unfortunately, Eric, the allegations are true. And you couldn't have a more credible witness to that than General Hugh Shelton, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He knows the promises we made after we went into Iraq in 2003 to this group, their resistance to the Iranian regime. They were there in Iraq. They were armed. We said to them, put down your arms, give us your weapons. We will protect you. And we did protect them for a period of time, but then in a place called Ashraf, which they built into a beautiful little community. But then as we began to pull out in 2009, much to the concern of the people in there who are Iranian resistance fighters, they were very worried about what would happen. And we promised them the Iraqis will take care of you. Well, the Iraqis haven't taken care of them. And by turning them over to Iraqi guidance or guard, we broke our promise. And I'm afraid we've created a real humanitarian crisis. No matter what you think about what's happening in Iraq, what's happening in Iran, America broke its word here, and we can't let that happen.
What should we do?
Well, I think in the first instance, because I think the folks in Camp Liberty now, 2,900 of them, because there's chaos in so much of Iraq, are in real danger now. They're the enemies of Iran. Iran has influence in Iraq. Iran, I think, has been behind some of the killings that have occurred at Camp Liberty. What we should do in the first place, send people from the American embassy to Camp Liberty every day. Try to get the UN to send in some blue helmets to guard them before something can happen. And then, most of all, get them out of Iraq. Get them to the United States.
Well, why isn't the administration doing that already? I mean, I talked to the former prime minister of Albania, who said they received about 200. He told me that Hillary Clinton and the State Department was involved in that. It seems this administration doesn't have a problem relocating top Taliban killers from Gitmo someplace else, yet these people apparently are sitting ducks.
I agree with you. These folks at Camp Liberty today are sitting ducks. They are freedom fighters. They are fighting for a secular, democratic, non-nuclear Iran, which is what we believe in. And they're actually a capable, talented group of people. We owe them refuge here because of the promise we made to them. But I'll go one step further. They would make great contributions to the United States of America if we took them in. There's legislation in Congress to force the administration to do that. I hope it passes soon.
You know, the group has a controversial history. Tehran claims, they say it's a terrorist group and a cult. I mean, does that any of that matter when you're dealing with these people?
No, it doesn't matter. This is today a question of America's word. We made a promise, and it's a question of a humanitarian crisis. 2,800 souls trapped in the worst possible circumstances. Any moment, the Iraqis, pushed by Iran, could turn their guns on these people, and that would be a terrible stain on America's honor and reputation. We've got to get them out of there as quickly as possible.
They've asked for this from President Obama, but they say they haven't heard. Finally, what should be done?
I know. Well, you know, my concern about this is that the people in the administration, or some people in the administration, may feel that these folks are such enemies of Iran that if we take them into the United States now, it'll sour our relations with Iran, make it impossible to achieve a nuclear weapons agreement with Iran. That's not the point. The point is America gave its word. These folks are living in conditions that are horrible. We owe it to them to bring them out. And I'll say one more word. I think it's better with lawless leaders like those in Iran when we stand up and show some backbone. And we don't care whether they're going to be upset that we took these people into America because they're enemies of the Iranian regime. They're friends of freedom, and that's what America's all about. We ought to welcome them here soon.
Senator Joseph Lieberman, thank you for
your
time
you.
Today.
Thanks,
of
sir.
Course.
And there you have it from former Senator Joseph Lieberman talking about something that we have a responsibility to do. We're playing politics with people's lives. These are freedom fighters, and they need refuge. And think of it this way. We are opening up our borders. There is a disaster in the making in the border security, and there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of refugees entering the United States. We don't have room for another couple thousand more that have risked their lives in the name of freedom against the Iranian regime. They're in a place called Camp Liberty, and we have a responsibility to show protection to them. It was this past December, 2013, there was a rocket attack at Camp Liberty. It killed four Iranian dissidents and wounded about 70. And still to this day, Iraq denies any responsibility for this attack on this group. It was most likely orchestrated from Iran. And this is what's going on here in Iraq. These are some dissidents that we have an obligation to protect. So there are many ways that you can get involved in this. Write your congressman, speak out, sign petitions, pray, do all that you can. And these are freedom fighters that are looking for a safe harbor. And they can't go back to Iran. They would be immediately executed. And they need our hope. Speaking about situations in Iran, the book I wrote about 2 years ago, The Rose of Nowruz, Dreams of Hope and Freedom, was all about the subject of women's rights in Iran. It's a deplorable list, the way women are treated as second-class citizens in Iran. And I found something quite interesting, an easy way to get a handle on really what are the ways that women's rights are being violated in Iran. I want you to hear this interesting soundbite. It's called 10 Violations of Women's Rights in Iran, right here on The Cross in the Desert.
Hi, I'm Christy Howard for Iran 180. Today we're going to be speaking about an issue that should be of great concern to women around the world, the Iranian regime's systematic discrimination of a full 50% of its population. Here's our list of our top 10 abuses facing women in Iran in no particular order. Number one, Iranian women are eligible for only half of the inheritance that men receive. Number two, female legal testimony is equivalent to a quarter of a man's. Number three, Iran's marriage laws give men more power in terms of divorce and allows men to marry more than one woman without the consent of his wife or wives. Number four, female medical students are often denied the opportunity to study specific subject matter because there are no female instructors available to teach them, and they can't be taught by men. Number five, in the case of adultery, all Iranians are eligible for the sentence of death by stoning. Attempts at escaping the stoning are allowed. However, when this sentence is applied to women, they are buried up to their necks. Men are only buried up to their waists, making escape possible for men and impossible for women. Number six, all Iranian artists are denied the ability to freely execute their artistic visions. but women face particular discrimination. Women are not allowed to sing as individuals. When they do sing, it can only be done in chorus. Number 7, women are not permitted to attend public sporting events. Number 8, Iranian women aren't allowed to display public acts of affection. Number 9, Iranian women who are lesbian face horrible abuse, as does the entire gay community in Iran. And number 10, Iranian women would not be allowed to wear a t-shirt like I am right now. These are just a few examples, some more significant than others, of how Iranian women are repressed under the current political system in Iran. It is important that women and men everywhere understand this reality, and that people who enjoy the freedoms of democratic society stand in solidarity with women who are denied full equality. Check back for regular updates and information regarding the abuses of the Iranian regime. For Around 180, I'm Christine Howard.
I thought that was an interesting way to just introduce this subject, because I found an insightful article by Saba Farzan and Benjamin Wiethenthal. It's called Iran's War on Women. I want to read a little bit of this to you because I think it puts in context what we just heard. You know, as the world powers meet with representatives of the Iranian regime in Vienna in their effort to end its illicit nuclear program, the plight of struggling Iranian women can shed light, really, on what's happening in this country. We believe Tehran's severe marginalization of women cannot be decoupled from the nuclear negotiations. A little over a year after Hassan Rouhani was elected president, he has failed miserably in fulfilling his pre-election and post-election promises to end widespread discrimination against women. Quote, women must enjoy equal opportunity, equal protection, and equal social rights. That is what Hosseini said in a televised comment marking Women's Day in Iran this past April 20th. Well, still, Rouhani has taken no meaningful action to challenge, either in word or deed, his boss, that is the Supreme Leader Al-Khamenei's statement. He said, one of the biggest intellectual mistakes of the West about the issue of women is gender equality. This is what the Supreme Leader said. The biggest mistake we have here in the West is to believe that women are equal to men, or gender equality. And really, Khamenei's views are not mere rhetoric, but have been codified since 1979 in the Iran system of Sharia law. The Islamic Revolution brought Iran back to the medieval ages with stoning, gender apartheid, and systematic oppression of the country's women. And this reminds me of the subject I had with my guest, Zainab Khan, this past Monday, about the struggle for rights for women all over the world, the abuse they suffer because they're women, and just the number of honor killings against women that we hear reported all over the world. Now, just taking what this article said, let's fast forward to this summer. Even under Rouhani, a self-described moderate, the barbaric judicial machinery continues its grind. Iran is slated to execute Reza Ebrahimi. Reza Ebrahimi is a child bride convicted of killing her husband in response to his domestic violence. Ebrahimi was forced to marry at the age of 14 and gave birth while she was merely 15 years old. It is also worth recalling the famous 2006 case of Sakia Mohammed Ishtiani, who was sentenced to death for alleged adultery. International public pressure has forced the regime to stay her execution, and that's good. Well, one could argue that Rouhani has no power over Iran's OPEC judiciary. Nevertheless, he has not moved beyond nebulous phrases about women's equality, even in the realm he does control. His lack of forceful condemnations and advocacy of change in the country's incorrigible reactionary laws is a form of complicity. Sadly, there is no shortage of repression of women in Iran. New educational restrictions were imposed on women in 2010, barring female students from accessing to a certain social study courses, women's studies and human rights, because they are deemed to be, quote, incompatible with Islamic teaching. Right now I have a guest coming online. His name is Hassan Fortusi, and he is with an organization called Say No to Executions in Iran, and we're going to join him right now, live from Sweden, on the cross in the desert. Welcome to the cross in the desert, Hassan.
Good evening. Good evening, Randy.
Good evening, Hassan Fortusi. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Yes. I am Hassan Fortusi. We are a group of human rights. We are calling you from the place of our campaign in Stockholm, Sweden.
Well, thank you so much. You've been campaigning for human rights in Iran, and your objective is to reach really a moratorium on the 160 juvenile imminent executions going on in Iran right now. And you've gone on a hunger strike, I take it, to protest against these executions of juveniles, and you're trying to really save the lives of teenagers. You're busy in a campaign right now. Tell us all about No to Executions and what you're trying to accomplish.
Yes, we have set our objective. Our main objective, specific objective, is to put a stop and to reach a moratorium, and we are going to stop the execution of 160 young people, as you said, by pressing the government of Sweden through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. We are doing this that we are asking, demanding seriously and urgently that the minister, the foreign minister of the Carl Bildt, the foreign minister of Sweden, will sooner or later will call Iran and ask Iran to halt such barbaric executions. They are barbaric. And Randy, I have my friends here around me. We have a group of 10 group members here. We are all activists in human rights, and they want to say even one, two, or three sentences to you.
Thank you, and welcome to the Cross in the Desert. I appreciate your hard work and your dedication to stop these executions, and welcome to my program.
Okay, so I give my mobile to my friend, Jose, and he will talk to you. Just 1 minute.
All right.
Yeah. Hello, Chad.
Hello.
Hello, is this Hassan?
Yeah, I am Kobad Najafi, and this thing from Sweden. We have camping against execution. Just help us to worth hearing us for saving their life. Thank
now,
you.
One of the things that thank you so much for mentioning that. I thank you for introducing me to you. And you have members of your campaign organization there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. I'm Fatima Feili from Sweden.
And welcome. My name is Randy. I'm host of the program, The Cross in the Desert. Welcome to the program.
Nice. We have a campaign against the execution, and we have a street theater to show what happened in Iran. Because nowadays, 160 teenagers are going to be executed. I want you just to send my voice to the human rights organization and the other organization who can help us for saving their lives. Don't be silent, please. Come and help us, please.
What is the most important thing, I was going to ask you, what is the most important thing we can do to join you in preventing these executions?
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello. This is Randy from the Cross in the Desert, and welcome to the program.
I am a Parvane Sajetur from Sweden. We want you to tell us for seeking teenager life who are going executed.
Right, and I support you in stopping this. What can we do to help you?
Campaign. Whole campaign.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for that. Yeah.
My name is Hachal Lotfi. I'm calling from Sweden. We have campaign execution of 116 teenagers in jail now in Iran and wait for execution. I say no executor.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much.
Hey, I'm Hamid Reza Shahbani. I'm calling from Sweden. We are here. We are campaigning in Mintorget Square in Stockholm. And we are striking against execution about 160 so young people that they are in jail in Iran. Thank you so much to helping us and support us. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. No problem.
I am Hossein Saadati. I see no execution. Two execution. I say no to two. Khamenei regime.
Hello, Randy. I'm back again. Hello. Randy.
Well, thank you for introducing me to your friends that are joining you, and I
yes.
appreciate what they have to say.
Yes, they are very serious and lovely. Randy,
now,
do you want to give you more information about our campaign and what are we doing?
Yes.
Yeah, Randy, as you know, we have added recently street theater, and every day we have two or three times of play. We play two or three times, and every time more than 100 people of audiences would come around us, around us, and would listen, watch us. It's fantastic. I can send you the – we all the members are asking you to help us echo and broadcast our voice here and there. We will send you some videos. Then you put it on your website or any TV that you know. And also we are collecting signatures from all the tourists and all the Swedish people. And we are going very soon, hopefully on Monday, all of us will go on parade strike. It means we all will be walking through the city and through the ministry blocks, because we are surrounded by ministry blocks here, like the parliament is here, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, some other ministries. We are going to have a parade, and this parade strike was suggested and was recommended by one of our friends, whose name is Isa Alipour, who is the leader of Liberation Front of Iran in Stockholm. He gave us the suggestion today that we go to work, and we are going to sit in front of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. We say we are not going to walk away until you call on Iran, the terrorist Iran, to stop and to halt this kind of barbaric and cruel and medieval executions. We condemn it.
Yes, and you know, one of the things that my listeners can do to join you, you have a page called No to Execution, and if they scroll down the
yes.
page, there's a link to sign a petition.
Yes, definitely. We have it. We have our fan page. Our fan page is named No to Execution. More than 400 people have liked us, and also there is a link to IPG, as you know, and thank you for you to support us. You liked us, and you also signed for us. Thank you for this.
Now, one of the things I want to know is what kind of response are you getting there in Sweden? What kind of feedback are you getting to what you're doing? Are you getting support? Are you getting criticism? Tell me what the response is.
Yes, we communicated on Monday with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and also the Parliament of Sweden and the UNHCR in Sweden. And we are waiting for the response. And also one Swedish media came 2 days ago on Tuesday. They came and covered us and put it on their website. This radio is called Sverige Radio. This is called Sverige Radio. They are broadcasting us. They are covering us. And they are going to help us. Maybe they will contact the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, because among the our friends, just I am on this strike, on a hunger strike, starting from Sunday. Today is the fifth day of my hunger strike, and I'm not feeling that well. So the way the Swedish radio is going to follow up with the public relations of the foreign ministry very soon and ask him to reply us. So we wait until Monday. We agree on it with all the members. We wait until Monday. On Monday, as I told you, and suggested by our dear friends, Isa Alipour and some others, Muhammad Ali Ansari and Mohsen Baghdadi, Mohsen Babazadeh, and some other of our friends, all Shamshiri, and some others. So we are going to have a some kind of fantastic and, let me say, unique parade strike through the ministry blocks, and we have to bring them down from their buildings, from their offices, tell them, come down, because this is urgent. This is imminent. The case is imminent. Today, tomorrow, next week, 160 people will be dead.
I wanted to mention something, Hassan, that I've been talking to on my program is about a person named Razia Ebrahani. She is a child bride that is facing execution for killing the man she was forced to marry. And this happened when she was just 14 years old. She had to get married. She was pregnant at 15, and she is one of the people I think you're standing in solidarity with to say no to her execution.
Yes, we know Razia. Razia, you know, she's having a very difficult time in prison, and sooner or later she will be executed. So we are trying to put a stop to it through our strategy. We are this time have decided to go very radical. Peaceful way of campaigning, I think, is over. There's no space for it. We need to be radical. Then the Minister of Foreign Affairs will send somebody to see our condition here, and we'll see that our demand is very humanitarian. It's not, we don't have any political demands. We are a humanitarian group. We are demanding something. We are saying that humans cannot end the life of humans. This is our motto.
I think too often, Hassan, politics plays such an impediment to helping people. There's so much political involvement coming in that there's not enough humanitarian response. So what I hope and pray will happen in your time, because you are busy now with campaigning and fasting, I send you my thoughts and my prayers. I pledge my support with you here on the Cross in the Desert. And what can you say now to those that are listening? What's the most important thing you can tell them to stop these executions? How can they be a voice for the voiceless? What can they do?
Can you repeat the question, Randy, again, please?
The most important thing my listeners can do to support you would be to go to your fan page. Is that right?
Yes, we want you to support us by broadcasting and echoing and reflecting our voice here and there, especially on media. So one day things will get the attention of media, so this will be broadcast and people will get to know.
Now, how long will you carry on your hunger strike? How long have you determined to do that?
Yes, we will never step back, Randy. We will never step back. Today is the fifth day. I will go until the 50th, 20th, 25th day. I've put in my life here. I never go back.
Okay. Well, Hassan,
I was able to stop.
Okay. We support you here on the Cross in the Desert. I appreciate you taking the time to tell us about your campaign, and this is about the lives of human beings. This is unacceptable that Iran would do this to young people. They have signed covenants saying that they would never do this to underage people, but they're doing it to teenagers. And so we support you here on the Cross in the Desert. We join you in being a voice for you. And do you have any closing remarks you want to make to our audience about your campaign?
Yes, as you know, this is sort of a strike campaign. We are very radical doers here. So we have sat here, and we have told the ministries that we will not go home until we achieve our objective, which is very humanitarian and based on the human rights. So Iran, and Iran led by Khamenei, the terrorist Khamenei, the dirty Khamenei, the killer Khamenei, the executor Khamenei, is doing something which has no space in 21st century. 21st century is the century of happiness and technology and development. He's just thinking of killing our young people. We condemn this. We condemn Khamenei, and we condemn this brutal punishment.
Well, we join you here on the Cross in the Desert. We speak out against this atrocity. Here on the Cross in the Desert, we speak nothing but hope and freedom to Iran. I want to thank you for your voice, being a voice for the voices. I want to thank you for coming on the Cross in the Desert. I will direct my listeners to your fan page, and we will get you support and we hope and pray that this will make a difference in the lives of these 160 juveniles. Thank you so much, Hassan, for coming on The Cross in the Desert. That is Hassan Fortazi from No to Executions, live from Sweden. They have a hunger strike. They are very, very committed to seeing a difference made in the lives of these 160 juveniles who are set to be executed in Iran. What I want you to do to help this guy out, to help this campaign out, go on your Facebook page to No to Executions. No to Executions. This link will be up on my Facebook right after the broadcast. You go to the No to Execution page, and you will see a link and a petition to sign. And this is a very serious situation. Iran is a culture of death. Iran does the things they do in adherence to Sharia law. And they are punishing young, most of them innocent teenagers who have been arrested on drug offenses. There's no rehabilitation. And these children, I would say, these underage youth are put to death systematically by the culture of death in Iran. So thank you, Hassan Fortazi, with No to Executions. Thank you for coming on the program. We support you. We stand with you in being a voice for these voiceless teenagers. What I want to do now is take a little bit of a break on my program. I want you to hear this song from Matt Redman. It's a song about mercy. And this is exactly what these young people need more than anything. And they need understanding, and they need mercy, not execution. So we're going to listen to this song right now, On the Cross in the Desert.
I will kneel in the dust at the foot of the cross, where mercy paid for me. Where the wrath I deserve, it is gone, it has passed, your blood has hidden me. Mercy, mercy, as endless as the sea. I'll sing your hallelujah for all eternity. We will lift up the cup and the bread we will break. All
Matt Redman on the Cross in the Desert, a song called Mercy. Your Grace Find Me. Your Grace Finds Me is the worship CD that's from. And that song talks an awful lot about the mercy of God, his undeserved favor and grace toward us. And I thought this was appropriate to play at the end of my interview with Hassan Fortazi, live from Sweden. And these young people need our understanding and our love and our mercy, not the hand that will kill them. I wanted to read just a few sentences from Hassan on this page that I just put up on my Facebook, which is a petition for you to be a voice for these 160 juveniles in imminent danger of death in Iran. And this is what it says, and it's very important that you understand this so you can go to my page and sign this petition. No to executions in Iran says, we are a Sweden-based human rights group protesting against Iran's execution to save lives. As you may know, every month a number of Iranians are executed by Iran's barbaric regime. The number of executions in Iran is really alarming. Iran's regime is ranked second in the number of executions after China and first compared to its population. The victims have been hanged on the guilt such as deserting Islam, political, civil, minority activism, and drug trafficking. These are the crimes. Only in the first half of 2014, 342 executions have been committed by Iran's regime, only 142 of which have been officially declared by the regime. And Hassan writes, you can help us stop or at least reduce the number of human executions by signing our petition. You can also visit our fan page below to like and support us in our campaign. This is the No to Execution page I just put up on my Facebook, and you can get involved and be a voice for these voiceless young people. It's horrendous. It is wrong. It is inhumanitarian, and we must put an end to this. I join Hassan with this. What I want to do, I found this on YouTube. This is so relevant to our discussion today, since we're talking about juvenile executions. This is a young Iranian girl who lives here now, and since she's left Iran, she feels a responsibility to do something for her country. She lives in a free nation now. I don't know what her location is. It's really not important, but she lives in freedom now, but her heart is filled with Iranians, and I want you to hear this. This is really moving. It's called Doing Something About Child Executions in Iran, here on the Cross in the Desert. Let's listen.
Set. Whenever you're ready.
Hi, my name is Tara, and I am making a film about a girl named Atefe. On a beautiful summer morning, as the sun comes out and people start their day, a 16-year-old girl named Atefe gets brought to the town square and is hung. My short film is about the last 10 minutes of this girl's life. It's based on true events that happened to Atefe. I, as an Iranian filmmaker, feel very responsible to tell the stories of my people, to tell the stories of girls like Atefe. I live in a free country. I can make films about anything I want. And I've chosen to tell a story that other filmmakers might not be able to tell in Iran. Being upset about these kind of stories and feeling bad about it isn't enough. I think that we, as people who live in countries that are safe, who can speak freely, we should stand up against injustice more than anybody. So help us give Atefe a voice. Help us give Atefe's a voice, all of them. Help us keep Atefe's memory alive forever and not let it die with her. Thank you for your time.
What a courageous young Iranian filmmaker. I was really touched by that. And she's referring to Atefe, I want to bring this story to your attention so you can get a little bit more of context as what she's referring to. On August 15, 2004, Atefeh Sahanali was publicly hanged on a boom crane in her hometown in Mecca, Iran. The judge, Haje Rezai, who carried out the execution himself, was quoted as saying, "This will teach you to disobey." Atefeh was only 16 years old. Iran is a signatory state to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Article 6.5 states that, quote, "Sentence of death shall not be imposed for crimes committed by persons below 18 years of age." Article 37 of the Covenant of the Rights of a Child explicitly states, "Neither capital punishment nor life imprisonment without possibility of release shall be imposed for offenses committed by persons below 18 years of age." Yet, in defiance to the international law and covenants, Iran continues to execute minors below the age of 18 for drug-related crimes and crimes against chastity. The United Nations Special Rapporteurs on Iran have condemned the public executions of juveniles, quote, as a violation of their international obligations, and they are calling for a moratorium against this practice, just like our guest Hassan and his organization is doing. Most of them, Iran really continues to top the list. Like Hassan mentioned, they are second in the world to execution. And Iran continues to shock the world with the increasing number of human rights violations. Hundreds of journalists, political prisoners, filmmakers, accused spies fill their prison system. Most of them are denied access, of course, to lawyers and fair trials. Hadi Gamani, who is the director of International Campaign for Human Rights in Iran, he summarizes the plight of Iranian children with this powerful proclamation. Hadi says, "The world should not be silent in the face of these executions. Children are the most vulnerable members of society. The majority of these child offenders were either framed or suffer psychological illnesses and have no access to fair trials." He says, "We must not remain silent, but speak out against the gross injustices and crimes against Iran's children." Going back to what our filmmaker said, Atefeh was only 16 years old when she was publicly hanged. And so we need to be a voice for Atefeh and the 160 other juveniles who face imminent execution in Iran. This past weekend, I spoke with Nazanin Afshinjam, who was and still is the president of Stop Child Execution. And she has dedicated her life for freedom and democracy in Iran and speaking out against these injustices. And it was back in 2008 where she had a public rally at the United Nations. It was on a platform with many, many pictures of these juveniles scheduled to be hanged. And, of course, the list has grown since then. But people like Nazanin and people like Hassan are making a difference in the world by letting their voices be heard against these atrocities committed by Iran in the name of juvenile executions. It wasn't more than just a few months ago online that I watched a video on YouTube with a public execution, and it was a life-changing event for me. And as I watched this, it was so hard to watch because I felt like I wanted to do something. I wish I was there. I could do something. And to watch another human being die like this is a life-changing event. It's most definitely compared to the life-changing event that brought me into doing what I'm doing today when I saw the video of Neda Sultan dying in the streets of Tehran in the 2009 presidential election. It's these kinds of events that are life-transforming. And we can't just look at these images. We can't watch these videos. We as human beings have something to do. We have to respond to it. And that's what Hassan and his campaign members are doing right now in Sweden. They're responding to the atrocities. They're responding to the Iranian regime, who have gone against their international covenants, who have the law that they signed their names to, and instead are executing these minors underage for offenses that certainly do not warrant a death execution, but because it's Sharia law, this is the way young people are treated. Well, I wrote a blog a couple of months ago, which is what I always do, on the cross in the desert, and it was entitled No Escape from the Hangman's Noose. And I wanted to share this with you because it really was a life-changing event for me. This is a little poem by a poet who was recently hanged in Iran, Hashem Shabani. And he wrote a poem called Seven Reasons Why I Should Die. And here's what he says. For 7 days they shouted at me, "You are waging war on God." On Saturday, they said it's because you're Arab. On Sunday, well, you're from Avaz. On Monday, remember that you are an Iranian. Tuesday, you mock the Holy Revolution. Wednesday, didn't you raise your voice to help others? Thursday, you are a poet and a bard. Friday, you are a man. Isn't this reason enough to die? Iran's beloved poet, Hashem Shabani, could not escape the hangman's noose. His crime? Voicing his opinion, speaking out against the repression of ethnic Arabs by the Islamic regime in Iran. Since the regime sees itself as, quote, God's representative on earth, there is no freedom of speech or disagreement. A person's fate is sealed when he or she publicly criticizes the government. You know, I remember one of the most dramatic scenes I ever witnessed in a movie was the powerfully painful execution scene in the movie Braveheart. You remember, if you saw that, it came out about, I think, about 20 years ago. It's the story of the Scottish freedom fighter, William Wallace, and he's brought before the English magistrate and tried for high treason and condemned to public torture and beheading. Well, Wallace refuses to beg for mercy and submit to the king, and the magistrate implores him one last time to beg for mercy, but instead, Wallace screams the word freedom, and right after that, if you've seen the movie, he is promptly beheaded. Well, just this morning, sitting at my computer, I witnessed my first public execution. This time, though, it wasn't a movie, but real life. A young man with his wrists tied and surrounded by two executioners wearing masks stood on a platform facing a bright spotlight in the early morning hours right before dawn in an undisclosed location in Iran. The two filmmakers can be heard discussing amongst themselves what this man must be feeling as he's being prepared to have a noose fitted around his neck. Then suddenly, in this video, he begins to cry out for his mother, begging to see her for the last time. And as I watched this compelling video, I could hear the frightening wail of his mother in the audience begging to hug her son for the last time. But her demands fall on deaf ears. The executioners refuse this man's last request. In desperation, the prisoner pushes over the stool he will stand on to be executed. Then in a frenzied moment, he kicks the men surrounding him, trying his best to escape the fate that awaits him. Finally, several other men rush to the platform and subdue the prisoner. They assist him upon the stool, tie the noose around his neck, and then quickly pull it out from underneath him. He struggles for a few brief seconds, dangling helplessly in the air, and then dies. I will never forget the haunting sounds that followed his execution. Cheers and praises from the audience. Well, but they're not delighting in the execution, but rather expressing their relief that his soul can finally rest and that he is no longer suffering. I sat at my computer, silently weeping, numb from what I had just witnessed. I really felt guilty that I could not say or do something to prevent this horrible tragedy. The painful reality of what his mother just witnessed just gripped my soul with feelings of grief and outrage. Then I remembered the last death cry made by William Wallace in Braveheart. Freedom! Unfortunately, there is no freedom for Iranians. Since Iran's new president, Hassan Rouhani, took office last August, there have been over 464 executions. There were at least 500 in 2013, 57 of them publicly. And in the beginning of when I wrote this blog, there was 85 in the new year. The government has become relentless in cleansing the political prisoner population. These helpless prisoners suffer from serious health problems while in prison without any intervening medical aid. They are not given any proper representations or fair trials and spend sometimes years enduring before finally being executed. Well, after witnessing my first public execution, I am now more committed than ever to continue speaking out and praying for these victims of injustice. To watch another human being dangling helplessly in the air with a noose around his neck is horrifying and demands a response, an outrage against these injustices. I cannot just sit by and be silent. Now, what you do when you come to my blog on the Cross in the Desert, you're going to see, if you can, watch it, the video of what I saw. And what I do, I challenge you to watch this. It's graphic. It will forever change your life, and you will never be the same. If after watching this video on my blog, you decide to become a voice for these helpless victims, then that is good. But this is actually what the Bible commands you and me to do. Proverbs 31, verse 8 says, "Speak up for those who cannot speak up for themselves. Ensure, that is, make certain, justice for those being crushed." You can go to my Cross in the Desert blogs. It's thecrossinthedesert.blogspot.com. In this particular blog that I wrote, read to you this morning, "No Escape from the Hangman's Noose." Again, on my Facebook page, you will see a link to No Executions in Iran. Please be a voice for these innocent 160 juveniles who face imminent execution in Iran. That's all I'm asking you to do today. Help be a voice for these voiceless young people. I want to play to you right now a little quick soundbite from just a couple of months ago to underscore the lack of freedom going on in Iran. If you well remember, the UN had an election, I think it was back in April, just a few months ago, and Iran, of all countries, was elected to sit on a committee for women's rights and human rights in Iran. I cannot believe this goes on. Saudi Arabia is also a member. The Sudan is also a member. Look at the atrocities of human rights, and yet, in the United Nations, they are elected to sit on committees. I want you to hear this special report right now on the Cross in the Desert.
All right. Meanwhile, let's talk a little bit about this. It looks as if the president's team at the United Nations has really dropped the ball, so to speak. It looks like the country of Iran, which, you know, per capita ranked number one in executions, they have been selected to sit on a commission for the status of women, also another position that enables them to silence human rights, which is so unusual considering the fact that they are, you know, do they stand for human rights, the country of Iran? Do they stand for standing up for women? Absolutely not. And yet they have been put on this particular commission for 4 years.
Yeah, it's a four-year position, and this actually took place in 103 seconds. So in 103 seconds, there was zero opposition. Now, there were other democracies that could have stepped in and raised their hand and said they opposed, which would have forced a secret ballot at minimum. But no one did, including the United States. Samantha Power, ambassador there, she tweeted. She didn't say anything there. She was not there, not present, not on the committee. But yet she was on Twitter saying this: yet again, Iran has ran unopposed and was elected to Commission on Status of Women, given record on women and human rights. This is an outrage.
Now, keep in mind, too, this is more than symbolism. Anytime there's going to be a women's movement or a condemnation of various nations over the next 4 years, a nation like Iran will say, I have no problem with that. Look at the way we treat our women. So their criteria for condemnations and their threshold for spending money on women's rights and women's issues is going to be extremely high because they're not really doing that in their own nation.
They don't respect women. And just look at the stats. Iranian authorities executed at least 270 prisoners from January to October of 2013. Prisoners are subjected to abuse and deprive them of necessary medical treatment. Women face discrimination in marriage and divorce, inheritance and child custody. And now that nation is on this particular commission. How does this benefit the United States of America? How could our team over the UN building right behind us, how could they possibly have dropped this ball?
Well, and after we've given almost $8 billion to the UN, you would expect some sort of action to take place.
You'd think.
Prevent something like this from happening. If you want a glimpse of what we're talking about here, there were two former Iranian prisoners that actually wrote a fantastic just book about the realities of what happens. They were both imprisoned. One of them actually, and I just want to make sure I say her name correctly, Marzia Amiri Zada, had this to say. She was condemned to prison, condemned to death. Okay, she was going to be executed and made it out. Here's the reality.
Women don't have equal rights with men. Even in prison, we could see this difference. They don't have rights to divorce. They don't have the rights to have the custody of their children. They are subordinate. They have to subordinate to their husband. And there are, I believe that, you know, women in Iran are under so much pressure because of the Iranian government, and they don't have any rights.
Think about it. In our country, we're outraged because there might be, in some stats, 12 cents difference between how much a man gets paid and a woman gets paid. That's where we're at. We might not be perfect, but my goodness, that's our issue. Look at their issues.
And now the very place that had that woman in prison set to die is going to be overseeing women and how safe they are across the globe.
Topsy-turvy world.
It's really hard to understand and comprehend how that could be, that Iran is been elected by the UN to sit on a committee for the rights of women and human rights in Iran. I mentioned in my interview with Hassan Fortasi a particular case going on in Iran that I want to continue to bring to your attention because it's about the issue of child brides. You know, now young girls in Iran can be married under the age of 14. There is a new law that a father can marry his cousin. Unbelievable. It leads to pedophile. It leads to incest. But there is a law in Iran that children under the age of 14 can be married. Focusing on that, what I just said, is the case of Rezaia Ebrahani. Rezaia Ebrahani. I want to read to you her case and her story. I want to bring this to your attention. I want you to get the focus on how women are treated in Iran. And in this particular case, I want you to hear about this in relationship to the child bride issue. Reza Ebrahani was forced to marry at the age of 14. She became a mother at 15 and then killed her husband when she was 17. She's 21 now, and she's on Iran's death row. Well, what happened was Ebrahan shot her husband while he was sleeping, and because of that, she buried him in the backyard. She faces imminent execution despite the international laws prohibiting execution for crimes committed by juveniles. Human Rights Watch has urged Iran's judiciary to halt this execution. Earlier this week, Ebrahami's lawyer, who also asked judges to consider a retrial, reported what happened in this case. She said, "I married our neighbor's son when I was only 14 because my dad insisted." Ebrahani was quoted as telling officials working on her case, "My dad insisted I should marry him because he was educated and was working as a teacher. I was 15 when I gave birth to my first child." Her child is believed to now be 6 years old. "I didn't know who I am or what life is all about," she said soon after being arrested. "My husband mistreated me. He used any excuse to insult me, even attacking me physically. Ebrahami is said to have admitted to killing her husband with his own gun before burying him in the garden. Ebrahami told police her husband was missing, but her own father found the dead body and gave it to the police. Now, what I want you to understand is Iran is a signatory to the International Covenant of Civil and Political Rights, which prohibits death penalty for convicts if their crime is committed while they were under the age of 18. Now, every time an Iranian judge issues a death sentence for a child offender like Ebrahami, he should remember he is flagrantly violating his religious and legal responsibilities to administer justice fairly and equitably. Iran's judiciary should reverse his execution order of a battered child bride. Although the death penalty for Ebrahami was handed down by the judges, her victim's family have until the very last minute to pardon her, a decision which they have so far refused. Under Iranian law, the victim's family has a final say over the death penalty. Now, going back on this particular situation, back in April, an Iranian mother pardoned a man who had killed her son just moments before he was to be executed. And her name is Samari Alanjad's act of forgiveness has since inspired dozens of other families across Iran to pardon convicts at the last minute. So there is that hope. If all the judicial processes fail, if all the petitions fail, if all of that fails, there is the possibility that the family of this murdered man can pardon Rezaia. Iran's judicial authorities have previously denied accusations of juvenile executions, but according to the HRW, the country has executed at least 10 juvenile offenders since 2009. This is a deplorable case. There is so much more that can be said, but I want to bring to attention to you the reason Cross in the Desert exists: be a voice for the voiceless. And this is my commitment to a country that has such gross violations of human rights every day. I talk to my friends almost every day, and most of the time they're busy with their studies. Most of the time they're studying, they're taking English translation, they're going to university, their life is just busy all the time. And sometimes you become numb to what goes on around you. And therefore, a lot of times I will talk to my friends who get to the point of where they say, there's nothing that can be done. It's never going to change. Well, and you can understand living there how you get to that point, the numbness that you feel. And you get to a point of where your life is so preoccupied, being so busy, that you are numb to what's going on all around you. And so when someone like me comes along and raises the alarm, sometimes the reaction is, that's what we do here. It's wrong, but we can never do anything to stop it. This regime will do what they want to do. And you can understand how my friends get to that point. And you can understand how they feel sometimes when they look all around them and see the injustices. And what I want to do is remind you, God says, about this situation. This is a psalm I always quote, but it's a promise to God. You see, God sees the injustices, and he has a promise he makes to those that are crying out to him. Those like Hassan Fartouzi and his campaign on a hunger strike to speak out against these injustices. We do our part, but our great God is doing something even more important. He is focusing on this evil, and his objective is to deliver those that are hurting. I want to read to you this psalm that is so appropriate for what's going on. It's a promise from God's word. As I always say to you on the Cross in the Desert, my job is to speak out and to pray. And I get my encouragement, do this, from the Word of God. I want you to hear from Psalm 72, verse 12. God This is written by Solomon, and he says of God, he will rescue the poor when they cry to him. He will help the oppressed who have no one to defend them. He feels pity for the weak and the needy, and he will rescue them. He will redeem them from oppression and violence, for their lives are precious to him. It reminds me of Moses in the Old Testament going to the burning bush, and Yahweh appears to him and calls him to be the deliverer of the children of Israel who are under oppression, and they are slaves to the Egyptians. And they cried out to Yahweh day and night, and Yahweh in his perfect timing sent a deliverer to set them free. And this is just what I read to you. He will rescue the poor. It's not a matter of, oh, he might, but he will, because God is committed to the poor and needy. He is committed to those that are suffering. And the reason I can say I know this, that he will, is because my God is not a distant deity who doesn't get involved in the sufferings of his people. The perfect example is Jesus, who suffered and died a horrible death to forgive us of all of our sins. What that tells me is that God understands suffering, and he himself entered into humanity and suffered for us. So our God is not distant and far removed from suffering. He himself suffered in his human flesh, and he understands our suffering. And so when I read this psalm, he will rescue the poor when they cry to him. I know he will, because he understands suffering. He will help the oppressed who have no one to defend them. These are oppressed people. They suffer day and night. I'm thinking of the political prisoners without any medical intervention. Some of them are taken to the hospital. Some of them die in captivity because there's no medical intervention. There's no mercy or pity. But God says he will rescue the poor. He will help the oppressed who have no one to defend them. These political prisoners have no fair trial. They have no lawyer to speak for them most of the time. And they are put in solitary confinement, and they are tortured. But God says, I'm going to rescue the poor. I'm going to help the oppressed. And I love what the psalm says. He feels pity. That is mercy for the weak and the needy. And he will rescue them. I love what it says. He will redeem them from oppression and violence. Why? Because their lives are precious to him. Precious. Favored. Highly valued. Precious. And so when I think of Saeed Abedini, and I think of Amir Hekmati, and Rahana Jabari, and Reza Ebrahani, and Miriam Ebrahani in the Sudan, and many, many more, thousands of more, I remember this precious promise that God is committed to rescuing them. He is committed to helping them. Because our God is a God of perfect righteousness and justice and mercy. He is merciful. He is full of mercy. Just like the song we heard on the program today, Mercy by Matt Redman. That is my God, that he is committed to rescuing them. He feels pity for the weak. I love this because God is a God of emotions. He has feelings, and he understands the suffering. Why? Because his only son suffered. He understands what suffering is all about. And this is why I trust my God. And this is why I follow my God. And this is why I believe in my God, because he is not far removed from the evil and suffering. He experienced it firsthand when he died to save us from our sins and to erase the accusations and the charges against us. And that is our God, that he is that merciful. Because your life is precious to him. No matter what you're going through today, no matter what dark trial you are facing, your life is precious to him. He keeps your tears in his bottle. That is, he keeps a record of your tears. He understands your pain and your suffering. And though there are times it looks like that he's not intimately involved, he is, because our God is involved behind the scenes, orchestrating business that he has to help us. He is in control. The Bible says he is sovereign, and he is in control, that he understands our weaknesses and our pains, and he will rescue us. And that is his commitment to us. I want to thank you so much for spending time with me today. You'll see on my Facebook, No to Executions in Iran. It is a specific page Hassan Portosi has. Please go to that page and read, and then sign the petition and be a voice for these suffering juveniles that are under the threat of imminent execution in Iran. You see, I always say it this way on my page, one click can save a life. That sounds very trite, but it's true. You can make a difference in the lives of these juveniles. You can make a difference in the lives of political prisoners in Iran by just coming to my Facebook page. If you're not my friend, please friend request me. And on my Facebook page, it's dedicated to the problems, the troubles, and the happenings in Iran. My page is filled with stories and petitions that you can get involved in. I want to say to you to have a great, incredible weekend. I want to thank you so much for being my guest on The Cross in the Desert. I want to say God bless you. I will see you next time on The Cross in the Desert. God bless you and have an incredible weekend.
Healing rain is coming down. It's coming nearer to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong, it's free.